The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
Attention! The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next! Please, stand by.
Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Hey ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Oh, hi there. I see that you've given the proper secret knock and password, so you may enter the clubhouse. I'm President Dave Nelson here for another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club with Brad Ludwig. Our guest on this episode has been on the podcast many times. He's the author of The Life Engineered and A God in a Shed. You can also hear him on the Overcast podcast with Amy Frost. Welcome back to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. It's been too long, JF. JF Dubow.
We have missed you.
I missed you guys too. I was actually super glad when Dave invited me back on because it had been so long. I thought I was losing touch with you guys.
JF, I cry every night that I was not seeing you.
Well, that didn't even sound remotely genuine. I can say that with all the promotion that you had done for The Life Engineered, it was like we got a lot of, and I mean this in a very good way, a lot of JF time, and that was nice. And then it's like you finished that up and you needed a breather from all the promotion, and now you're doing God in the Shed, so now you're back, and
okay.
That's a very good thing.
Okay, let's talk about that after we talk about our first news story. So here we go.
Headline news of vital, significant events. From every corner of the earth, spoken news, brought into your home, your office, even into your car as you speed along the highway.
This is the news. Here are the headlines.
All right, three big news stories of the week regarding science fiction. And former guest on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Andy Weir, in the news this week. This comes from Blaster.com. Author Andy Weir, and this came to us actually from our good friend Gregor in our Slack chat group. By the way, if you support us on Patreon, if you don't, though, that's good. But we'd like you to. Go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts and support us for $1 a month. That will get you exclusive access to our Patreon Slack group, and you can contribute stories to our podcast or talk to us, chat with us during the show there. So that's what Gregor did. Author Andy Weir, who wrote the best-selling sci-fi novel, The Martian, which, of course, was made into that blockbuster movie starring, what's his name?
What's his face?
Matt Damon, come on!
Thank you. Sorry. So, apparently,
we've saved him. We brought him back from so many places and saved him from so many situations.
Sorry. Brain fart. Thank you, JF. You're a lifesaver.
I like to call that wit lag.
So,
I like the sound of that.
So apparently, Andy's a big fan of the Ernest Cline book Ready Player One. He's such a fan that he wrote his own personal, his own prequel short story within that universe. Basically, it was fan fiction. He wrote it for fun and posted the story online on his website. Well, turns out Ernest Cline, or Ernie as his friends call him, got a hold of Weir's story, liked it so much, he decided to retcon it as official canon. He then went on to include it as an addendum to the new edition of Ready Player One. You can read Weir's story. It's called Lacero or Lacero? What do you guys think?
It would be a soft C, so it would be Lacero.
Okay, Lacero. And his web address is GalactNet. It's almost the same as our network.
I was going to say
galactanet.com.
Quick, to the lawyers.
I actually think he had it first. So,
Dave. Anyways, yeah, go on.
I was going to say we'll put the link in the show notes because it's a long. You don't want to hear me just rattling off a URL. That's no good for anybody. But I'm sure you can do some Google searching and find the link to that story, the short story. And on Andy's Facebook, he wrote, "I've written a best." Hang on a second. I've written a best-selling novel. I've had a blockbuster movie made out of my book. I've gotten drunk with Ridley Scott, but now I've achieved a dream that's much harder to accomplish, a dream that almost no writers in history have actually had come true. I wrote a fanfic that became canon. This is a really awesome story, too. I mean, this... Yeah, it's who else has done this? Who else has gone and liked something so much they wrote their own story within that universe, and then the author of the original story liked it so much that he added it on to the story and made it canon? That's so awesome. He went on to say, shortly after reading Ernie Cline's masterpiece, Ready Player One, I knew I had to make a fanfic. I just needed more of that world. So I wrote a short story called Lucero and posted it on my website. Ernie read it and liked it, so the recent Subterranean Press version of Ready Player One has some extra materials, including Lucero. They sent me a couple of copies of the edition, so I sent Ernie a thank you email, and I got his reply. It said, "Hey, Andy, so glad you received your copies. Thank you once again for letting us republish your short story. Now it's canon. I hope you're well, sir." Ernie.
Boom.
So, an author's perspective. JF.
Sure.
So, if you liked a book so much that you wrote, that you wanted to write a fanfic, what story would it be?
Oh, wow, you're taking me really out of context. I am right now, what I would write fanfic or official fic or any fiction of, given the chance, would be anything relating to Overwatch, because I'm really neck deep into that world. I love what I'm seeing so far. If I were to write fanfic, it would probably be something in that universe. But based on a book, I don't know. There's very few books I've read that I feel like... Usually when I feel like I want more from a universe in a book, I want more of what the author has to say. If I have a setting, I want to create something new for it. So I'm guessing that's how Andy Weir felt about the Ready Player One world.
Mm-hmm.
What fascinates me about this story, though, is the implications of... Well, not the implication, but the thing is, like you say, like we haven't seen much of that. But I have a feeling, not because of this story, but because of the way... authors seem to be interacting, and how it's being a writer is a lot less of an insular, you know, silo type occupation right now. I have a feeling this is the kind of thing that we're going to see a lot more of in the future.
Yeah, and I know that I'm pretty sure that Andy and Ernie have hung out. At least I've seen one picture of them hanging out. I don't know how close of friends they are, but I'm sure that that's one of the reasons why he included it, is because he's a goddamn good author. I wonder if this is probably not going to be included in the movie version of Ready Player One, right? Probably not.
Well, if it's a short story, it's probably self-contained, so I'm assuming not. But here's the thing. I'll give you an example of something that I'm actually a part of that is a symptom or a different interpretation of this sort of new way of approaching things. I'm part of the Ed Greenwood group,
yep,
which is a group of authors and creators brought together by Ed Greenwood to create stories and write books, novels, and short stories and all sorts of things in universes and settings that he created. And of course, we're all encouraged, whoever's creating in those settings, to interact with each other and communicate and trade ideas and characters and concepts and plot devices. So this idea of having, like, basically what's happening with this, it's a very low scale version of having a shared universe. So Ernie Cline creates a universe and Andy Weir writes something in that universe. Meanwhile, what Ed Greenwood's doing is something maybe less popular, but maybe grander scale, in the sense that he's intentionally creating a shared universe that people can play with. And I see that going forward as being something that's more popular.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine, if you will, like, we won't see that now because obviously she's got a very tight grip of ownership on that. But let's say J.K. Rowling were to manifest herself today instead of 20 years ago or whenever, with creating the Harry Potter world, and she had a bunch of author friends that said, this is neat. Can I write a story about this? Can I write the story of the American or the Canadian wizard school?
Mm-hmm.
That is something that today's climate, as far as creators are concerned, would definitely allow and encourage. So I'm glad to be seeing things like that, because I love this idea of collaborative works like this.
And not to mention, shared universes are huge right now, with the cinematic universe, the Marvel cinematic universe, the DC cinematic universe. Everybody's trying to connect different pieces of work that are related into a larger universe. So I can totally see this happening more within the literary world. And I think Andy Weir is perfect for writing a fanfic or something to include in canon for Ready Player One, because it seems like those two authors have similar styles in their writing.
I haven't read Ready Player One yet, so I don't know much about Ernest Cline's actual tone. I mean it's in the pile.
Get on it. Come on, quit.
Yeah,
quit.
I'm in the same boat.
Quit your writing book after book and just start reading. Come on. Jeff.
Yeah, it's become quite the problem, in the sense that there's a lot of things. Like, I have a lot of friends that are creators. There's a lot of very popular books, things like Ready Player One, that I feel that just to be part of the cultural conversation, I should read. But if I have some spare time and you ask me, do I want to read or do I want to write, I'm not going to read most of the time.
That's understandable.
Yeah, but it can easily be a handicap. But like you say, like, I like the idea of these things being shared universes. I mean, in a way, like, if I want to be like the egotist narcissist, like, I love the idea of someone writing something in one of my universes. That would be amazing.
Well, let's talk about your universes. Welcome back to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club again, JF Dubois. You've been really busy since the last time you were on here. The Life Engineer finally out. It's out in the wild, as they say. So how did all that go? Tell us what you've been up to in 5 minutes or less since we last had you on the show.
Book release. We had a very, very small launch party in a tiny, adorable bookstore here in Montreal. We had some 11 people, and it was very stuffed. So you can imagine it was not a big bookstore, but we had a good time. Some of my quote-unquote co-workers, the other authors from Inkshares, put together a hangout on a laptop that we had in the store, so a few other people were able to join remotely, so that was neat. I'm looking forward to doing another book release so I can do that again, but on a larger scale for the online portion, because the thing is, I don't have a lot of local readers. A lot of my readers are people like you and Brad and people from the Tadpool Diamond Club. So we had that event. Here's the funny thing is that I'm realizing about a book release. Like, I've had this impression that it would be like you lead up to that date, that release date, and then boom, there's this big thing and it kind of explodes from there. But because of the way pre-orders work and the way digital distribution works, most people that had pre-ordered a book had it in hand a week or two before the official release date. So the actual release date feels like a very soft launch. Like, there's no explosion, there's no big thing going on. However, like, to promote sales, it's there. So I did a lot of podcast interviews. I did a lot of interviews with various media. It's like, nothing big. It's not like the Wall Street Journal had an article on me or anything like that. But I did the podcasting rounds.
You were – what was that big website that you were – they did something about you. God, there was a big news website did a piece about you or on you. What was it? I forget now.
Examiner?
Yeah, Examiner. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That's pretty big.
We're very lucky at Inkshares that one of the writers for Examiner has taken a particular interest in the authors at Inkshares, Alicia Smuck, I can't pronounce her last name. It's this Frenchism. Anyways, and she's been basically interviewing all the authors that have books coming out and reading our books and giving reviews. And she's been super gracious with us. And she even did an interview specifically for God in the Shed to help get more visibility and promoting and get more pre-order so we can get the book published. She read some of the material that's already available for the book and she loved it. So she says, so she's trying to do her part. So it's neat. I'm glad that there's it's Inkshares as a platform is getting that kind of attention.
Mm-hmm. So two more things before move on to the second story. Where can people find your book, and what's the preferred way of getting your book? What do you want people to do?
If people are ordering, okay. So there's different ways. If you are a North American citizen and you want a copy of Life Engineered, order it on Amazon. And I'm telling you this for two reasons. A, it's the cheapest place I've found so far. The other advantage is that you can leave a review there, and it's going to be a verified review, which is good for the SEO on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we want reviews and we want good SEO is that so that more people are exposed to the book. If you're not in North America or Canada or US, you don't have access to Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. For some reason, there's no Kindle version on Amazon.co.uk. Then go to the Inkshares website because you can buy it from there and you can get a DRM-free digital version, either EPUB or Kindle. And that's the easiest way for you to get it there. Otherwise, you have to order a physical version. And mm-hmm. if that's not what you want, then boo.
All right. So how is The God in the Shed A God in the Shed going?
I don't know. I need 750 pre-orders, and I have 520 right now, I want to say. 521 right now. It's not a bad number. There's still a month to go. Things could go really fast, but it's hard to not be nervous. And I have run out of people to directly harass about it. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for new sources of people to bother about this.
So, okay,
It's going well.
Okay. We can help here. We can totally help you, JF. So everybody listening to this podcast, find somebody in their life that hasn't heard about your book on Inkshares, A God in the Shed. And those people, where should they go so they can pre-order that?
They can go to bit.ly/God in the Shed.
Okay.
I decided to make a short URL for it because it's easier.
That's smart.
And there's like six chapters there, and there's also a link to the prologue read by my co-host on Right Brain, Paul Inman, who does an amazing voice, a narration for it, for the prologue. Really captures the creepiness I wanted for that text. There's a lot of materials that you can see what you're getting into. And the idea behind Inkshares is really getting on the ground floor of helping authors promote their work. So what you're buying, if you're pre-ordering a book, if you're pre-ordering a physical copy, you're getting a signed physical copy. Some authors like me, I like to include, I'm probably going to include some signed art prints that I did for the book. So it's in the same way as say for Kickstarter, there are some, you may be paying a bit more for a book, but you're doing it because you're encouraging an artist, but also the artist will like throw in some things to make the order, like the support feel more exclusive. Like one of the things, if you pre-order three copies, you get your name in a list of patrons at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think you guys did.
I think so too.
I think so.
Like I know I thanked you guys directly. I mentioned Galactic Netcast in my acknowledgments because you guys were so freaking amazing in helping me out during the Life Engineer funding.
Thanks.
Well, we take care of our family, and you are definitely a part of that.
Thanks.
Cool. All right. So again, what's the bit.ly again? One more time.
bit.ly/God in the Shed.
Okay. Cool.
All in one word.
All right, let's move on to story number two, and this comes from sciencefiction.com. Are Marvel one-shots moving from MCU Blu-ray releases to the internet? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Ahead of the release of their film, Captain America Civil War, directors Joe and Anthony Russo have been doing a ton of press. In a recent interview with Forbes, the duo touched on their next project, Avengers Infinity War, and the massive roster of characters involved. They said there's, it's not in this article, but there's like an ungodly amount of characters that are going to be in Infinity War Part 1 and 2. It's like in the hundreds, I believe. After revealing that many new faces will be introduced in the epic two-part extravaganza, they mentioned that one way the world could get to know these other inhabitants of the MCU outside the shows or films could be with Marvel one-shot short films. And I think we're all familiar with the one-shots. Brad, do you want to describe one of the one-shots for our listeners if they're not familiar with them?
Yes. My favorite short is Something Happened on the Way to Thor's Hammer, which is our like full introduction to the capabilities of Phil Coulson as a member of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is driving in a vehicle on his way somewhere, and he stops at a gas station to fill up, and wackiness ensues during a robbery of the gas station.
That was really good. Yeah.
And it is a well choreographed, well written short segment. I think it's only 5 minutes long, but it's just, it's beautiful. It's a thing of beauty.
And that's why these one shots are perfect for something like YouTube, which they talk about here in the interview. They say, but with the rise of digital releases and the decline of physical media, where could these popular extras find a new home? Anthony Russo said they've got a few ideas. There's this wonderful internet platform out there called YouTube. I think he was being kind of a little bit sarcastic. It can make money by creating anticipation for a movie in the same way that a trailer does. They could do more elaborate versions of trailers, for instance, that are shot specifically for online that will never appear in the movie, and that may appear as kind of a short film, which is, they're kind of talking about the Marvel one-shots here. Joe Russo continued by saying that they're not limited to YouTube or other conventional video streaming services. They've been looking at various other social media platforms to unveil additional content featuring Marvel characters. We're also talking to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram about ways to feed ancillary content to them and to viewers because it'll go viral there and can reach millions of people. The platform is changing, but it's a lot easier to sit on your couch and Apple TV pops up rather than having to go find the DVD and then find the extras and watch the one shot there. So I like this idea. I like companies and people that are thinking outside the box and not just limiting it to something they've been doing for years, right? Are you guys in favor of this idea?
Absolutely.
I'm in favor and more. Let me paint you a picture here. Did you guys know a bit about this little Blizzard game called Overwatch?
Yes.
I've heard some stuff and I have listened to your podcast.
Fantastic. So here's the thing. Overwatch is basically, it's a shooter game, but whatever. That's not important. The thing is, as far as the story goes, there's a lot of characters involved. And not all the characters were revealed at the same time. But much the same way as for Infinity War, you want to give a bit of background to the characters before introducing them to the public in the actual, in this case, in the movie, but in the case of Overwatch in the game, you want to give it a bit of background. What they did that was interesting, that I can see a company like the producer, like Disney, be able to do on a much larger scale, is for some of the characters earlier on, they created these kind of custom teasers for it. I'll give you an example that's very salient in this case. One of the characters is called Lucio, and he's this kind of revolutionary sort of DJ guy, and he uses very sound-based attacks and mostly healing and things like that. And the way they introduced him is that a week before they actually revealed the character, they released a couple of tracks from his latest album and talked about one. They put in a news report about his one of his concerts, and essentially created not just a story. Like, obviously right now Blizzard's putting out animated shorts of some of their characters to introduce more story elements, but imagine if Disney were to do these shorts, do these one shots, but also add this background element to them, like news reports and information and things that relate directly to the character's thematics. And they can certainly go all out for that.
Yes. I was just thinking about, you know, not just the Marvel universe, but the other Disney properties like Star Wars. You could do things, you can expand, you know, because there's all these, like, I don't know, they've been using comics recently to extend the story more than you saw, like books. They're using books and comic books and other media to expand the story of the what's going on in the Star Wars universe. Why not make some shorts, just like the Marvel one-shots? And, I mean, Disney's got enough money to do that, right?
Exactly. And what's interesting right now, and we're seeing this in the world of entertainment, is that things are no longer kept inside a small bubble. Like, it's not just, oh, this is a movie franchise. It's now the way things are seen is that this is an intellectual property and we can do so many things with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it. I used Overwatch as an example, because one of the things that we stress a lot when talking about Overwatch on our podcast is the fact that this is an intellectual property first and foremost. The game is sort of the hub at the middle of the wheel, but it's really just there to hold everything together. Because Blizzard is a gaming company, that's what they do well. But it is clear from everything that they put in motion from the first day that what they want to do with this is have stories, books, comics, all sorts of different media that expand from the game, and the game just be one element in a huge empire around that IP.
Mm-hmm.
And Disney is definitely trying to do the same thing, although I'm amazed at how fast they're moving because they're such a huge behemoth. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving where media is going because it's not being so siloed.
Brad, what are your thoughts on this?
I've kind of missed, they haven't done, you know, shorts at the end of movies for a while. I think not since where they had the follow-up to The Mandarin.
Oh, yeah. So it's been since Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I think so.
There's
so
been
it's
a few
been,
movies.
You know, a good two and a half years.
Yeah.
And I've kind of missed that.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things I really look for because I'd always buy a Blu-ray DVD just to make sure I got that content. There are so many opportunities for them to explore the world. And quite honestly, if they're going to be doing Infinity Wars and introducing a ton of characters, it would almost behoove them to get origin stuff out of the way. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Get an introduction to those characters, then you don't have to burden a movie with any origin material. It's out there. They can do marketing and get people to go to their YouTube channel and rake in cash doing advertising there while serving to deal with editorial issues that could come up with, you know, shoehorning 68 characters into a film. So I think there's a lot of opportunity that can be tapped using YouTube.
Especially for the little known characters like Daryl Johnston, who hosts Who Knew in Review on the Galactic Netcast Network. He posted a story in our Patreon Slack chat, which you can do at patreon.com/galacticnetcast for only $1 a month. But he put the story in that there's a rumor going around that they're going to be doing something with Captain Britain. Is it Captain Britain?
It is Captain Britain.
Yeah.
Yes. So
I need to go read that review. That article.
It's strictly a rumor that it is kind of being tossed around.
I used to love Excalibur until it went to hell somewhere around the 50 issue mark. So yeah, I'm in on this.
Yeah, when Davis and Farmer were doing it, it was a well worthwhile comic book.
So,
and then later on, it just kind of got yucky.
This is something that would be perfect for terrible. A platform like YouTube. It's a character that is not a well-known... You guys know the character, but most of the audience for the non-comic book reading MCU viewers will not know who Captain Britain is. So if they don't want to do it like on a traditional TV, like a Netflix or a broadcast TV, then do it on their YouTube channel. Make a one shot out of it, or a continuing series on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, the fun has just started. We have a lot of superhero and comic book stuff in the future, including this weekend with the release of Batman versus Superman. By the time that you guys get this podcast, we'll know more about it. There'll be people actually going to see it. Right now, the reviews are not that favorable, but I guess we'll see. Let me ask you, are you guys both going to go see it this weekend or soon-ish?
No, go ahead, Brad.
No, you go ahead. You're the guest.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I want to go see it this weekend. I might not. I'm probably not going to have time, which means I probably won't have time for a week and a half, which kind of frustrates me because I'm eager to see it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't know. It'll be next week sometime, probably during the day by myself, just because the way my schedule is laid out for this weekend. But Brad, are you going to see it this weekend or are you going to wait?
Alex has spring break next week, and I am taking Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off next week, so I'm thinking we might hit a matinee together.
Nice.
Like on Monday or Tuesday.
Okay, cool. You guys looking forward to seeing it?
I am.
It's funny because I'm kind of encouraged by the reviews because the critics don't like it, but apparently the viewer reviews are in the upper 70s, early 80s. So I'm more inclined to trust people that went to see it because they wanted to see it than
yes.
people who see it because it's their job to see it.
Yeah, you're right. I've seen some really, really positive reviews, like not reviews, but like first reactions. And I guess saw somebody say something like, it's the best superhero film since, I forget which one it was, but like it's the, I think they said something like it was their second most favorite all-time superhero-based film. So
that sounds very optimistic. I very much doubt I'm going to walk out and think that it is the best thing ever, but I'm not looking for it to break record. I just want it to be entertaining, and I want it to be a good starting point for the expanded DCU.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, we've had one DCU movie right now. I don't even know why we call it a DC Cinematic Universe. It's a movie.
Yeah.
Like we're finally getting a second one. So yeah. I'm eager to see where that goes.
All right. Before we move on to our third and final story, we'd like to invite you to join us online. You know, the internet, that thing that we're actually using right now to record this show. We have accounts on social networks such as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, and you can find the links to all of those and more on our website, gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com, or just search for Galactic Netcast on the ones I mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. All right, this comes from blaster.com. And I thought of you, JF, when I saw this, because I know that you're into you're into something, some
miniatures.
Yeah, miniatures.
Yeah, I'm into miniatures.
Okay. Well, this might be interested of, maybe might be interested of you.
Just before you talk about it, my initial reaction was, who cares? And then I thought about it, and I thought, this is amazing. Go.
Okay. So the Sci-Fi Network expands 3D printing partnership with MakerBot for 12 Monkeys and Hunters. This kind of relates to a story that we had on, that was the alien invasion. Never mind. But we talked about something that Sci-Fi was doing a couple weeks ago on the Alien Invasion podcast, where they had a partnership with What was that music streaming service, Brad? Spotify.
Spotify.
Yeah. So the folks at Sci-Fi Labs teamed up with MakerBot for some 3D models to promote The Expanse a few months back, and now that deal has been expanded to include a whole lot more sci-fi shows and models. The two companies announced an expansion of the partnership with a new line of exclusive 3D models from the network's original series, 12 Monkeys, which is awesome, by the way. It's coming back very soon. The Magicians, Hunters, Killjoys, also a good show, and Dark Matter. Some of the new models will include the Project Splinter Time Machine from 12 Monkeys, plus an alien skull from the new action thriller Hunters. Printable files will be available on Sci-Fi's Thingiverse page, and the network will launch additional models in the coming weeks. Matthew Chiavelli, Senior Vice President, Sci-Fi Digital, noted that the burgeoning 3D market or printing market is a natural avenue to enrich the network's relationship with fans in a new way. We're excited not only to see the partnership between MakerBot and Sci-Fi Labs grow, but also for new designs that will be uploaded to Thingiverse, said Eric Mortensen, community manager, MakerBot Thingiverse. Since Sci-Fi joined Thingiverse at the beginning of this year, they've reached nearly 1,000 followers, who, among others, are no doubt excited to see what comes next. So basically, they've teamed up with Thingiverse and MakerBot to make these plans available that you can actually print up on your 3D printer. So, JF, I want to hear your thoughts on this. You kind of teased it at the start of the show.
I'm going to let Brad go first because I may go a while.
Okay.
You know, it's a cool way to get people who enjoy making 3D stuff, who are also fans of sci-fi or the shows.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing too is, if you're just a hobbyist who does not necessarily make your own stuff, it's kind of cool that there are places where you can go to print stuff that you're not designing or making yourself. It's there available for you, and if you enjoy it, you can make that connection and print the thing that you are passionate about. So I think it's a cool way to help people use the 3D printer that they bought and realize that they don't have, you know, design software to really make things happen with it. So
yeah, and this kind of is an expansion of, you know, back in the day when you were a fan of whatever sci-fi show, Battlestar Galactica, Space 1999, Buck Rogers, whatever, Star Trek, and Star Wars, mm-hmm. you'd have to go to the store to get whatever, like models or, you know, Lego toys. You know, that still goes on, right? So they're basically, sure. they're taking the middleman out and appealing to hobbyists that happen to have a 3D printer. And I'm guessing a lot of people that have 3D printers are fans of sci-fi, right? You'd think that.
I would say it's a safe bet.
There's probably a crossover market there.
Yeah. I mean.
So.
And the other thing that I wanted to mention too is I've done some like 3D art and stuff like that, but I haven't really made my own models. So there were sites out there where you could actually get already made 3D sci-fi like ships. Like you could get a DXF file of an Enterprise or, you know, whatever. Download that because it was made freely available to people that, you know, knew where this website was. And then add that to your work. So, I mean, it's kind of like an extension of that type of model of website usage.
It's more than that. It's these companies taking ownership of that. It's basically instead of having someone create the 3D file and upload it, and the company seeing no promotion, seeing no money, seeing nothing from it. At least they're taking ownership. They know they won't make any money, but they can get some promotion from it.
Are these
important.
Are these plans free to use? Do you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they are. Thingiverse usually is free.
Okay. Yep. I wasn't quite sure.
So
yeah, I'm on the site right now.
So here's the thing. You know what biggest disappointment was for me from Star Wars Force Awakens?
There was no Rey action figures. You
no,
missed.
Because that's bullshit. There were Rey action figures, just not enough.
Yeah, I know. Okay, all right.
No, I'm not going to go into a very long sideline. I agree about the outrage. I disagree about how it was voiced because it sounded stupid.
Okay.
You can't lie in your outrage because it murders your point. The outrage was right, but you can't say there was none of them because now you sound like a liar. That being said, my biggest problem was not enough new ships.
Oh.
There was a new TIE fighter, there was a new X-Wing, and there was a new landy ship that Kylo Ren had. Because I freaking love Star Wars ship.
Is that the official name, landy ship?
Yeah, sure.
It is now.
It is in my mind. Because, see, I love Star Wars ships. Like, I really, really need them as much as possible. But the thing is, I need these things for all the movies I see. Like, just look at Brad's Funko Pop collection. It's insane.
It's ridiculous.
There's probably a name for that disease. I just don't know it. But clearly, Brad has a problem.
I do.
And the way I see it is, if I can get models of cool things for every movie that comes out that has a cool thing. Right now, clearly, they're stretching. I mean, the Time Machine from 12 Monkey looks boring and stupid. I wouldn't want to print that. But they're trying to get things. Like, they're teasing out, testing the model. That's cool. That's fine. But can you imagine Star Wars Episode 8 comes out? They've got a couple of new ships in there that look rad. And they have these, like, a month before the movie comes out, they have models that people can download. Hobbyists download these things, they print them in 3D, they detail them, they pro-paint them, they start putting that online. The promotion potential is ridiculous. And that's just for something obvious like that. I honestly, and right now it's not being used in a very clever way because, again, like, they're just trying it out. Like, they're just starting. They're feeling things out. But if you plan your teasers of what kind of files you release, you can have this be very, like, very subtle things
mm-hmm.
that kind of hint at things and just add to what you see in the trailer. It's anyways, the potential, the promotional potential is endless because you don't need. Like, you release that file, and you don't need a million people to download and use it. All you need is a dozen, two dozen really well-known, professional, quality artists to download these files and make cool models and post them on social media, and you will get viral marketing out of that.
Mm-hmm. I can see, you know how when a movie comes out, one of the first things that get leaked are the toys from, like, the New York toy fair, whatever it's called, toy show. Look at this new toy from this new movie that's coming out. This is our first look at so-and-so. That could be done with 3D modeling, right?
Production costs for 3D modeling compared to inline manufacturing is ridiculous. The advantage of 3D modeling is that you can do it at home.
Mm-hmm.
But 3D modeling, like, you're not going to get, like, here's a good example. This is the ghost from Star Wars Rebels. This is from Fantasy Flight Game. It is, you know, manufactured. It is painted. It is much more detailed than what you can get from most 3D printers right now. And it probably costs a fraction of what it would cost to print in filament with a 3D printer. So manufacturing still has a huge leg up off 3D printing. However, I needed to get off my ass, go to a store, pay money to get something that was probably manufactured in China, and then bring it home. Meanwhile, with a 3D printer, you can download the file and print it at home. And if I were to break a piece of this, I would need to buy a new one or repair it myself. Meanwhile, with a 3D printer, I can just print a new piece.
What I was saying was, I could see a day sometime in the future where instead of seeing something leaked from the New York toy show, you'd see somebody like, Disney made available the plans for this ship from this Star Wars movie coming out, and this is the first look at it from this 3D model that somebody made in their house that they posted a picture of online.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's again, like, this goes back to the promotional possibility that putting it, basically it crowdsources the marketing of the product in a way. And that to me is something that's really exciting.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on it. And this might actually be my motivation finally to go across the parking lot. We live right next to a library, and in that library, there's a 3D printer, which I could use for free. All I have to do is bring my own materials. So,
oh, wow.
I might be motivated now to actually go over there and do that.
I would definitely take advantage. Like, I don't see myself buying a 3D printer for quite a while because I don't feel the technology is really there. But one of the things that we're starting to see is places that will do prototyping for a somewhat reasonable price. And what's fun about these places is that they'll have different types of 3D printers, because they're not like filament 3D printers. Like the what we see in the Blaster article is definitely filament printed, but you have different like liquid resin printing and powder resin printing, different things that have offer different results and different resolutions. So I'm eager for more of these places to pop up until the technology becomes less of a hobbyist thing and more of a commonplace technology, consumer product, if you will.
All right, that's our news. Any final thoughts before we move on, guys? Brad, one more thing, or no?
You know, the only thing that I was thinking to mention is I don't believe in the Lucas deal, I don't believe that they got the rights to all the ships, which is why they redesigned the X-Wing, the TIE Fighter, and that's why we didn't get to see B-Wings.
Oh, that's interesting.
In the film.
Okay.
Because it makes more sense in the run that they do on the planetoid to use B-Wings for bombing. Than
Y-Wings. Y-Wings are bombers. I mean, the B-Wings definitely is a gunship. But
yeah. The B-Wings, Y-Wings, but we only had X-Wings, so.
But why didn't they make new ones? Like, that's the thing. There's three new ships, and two of them are variants of things we've already seen. I'm so disappointed. I wanted to see new cool things.
I think it's somebody, a good friend of mine, also really has been following all of the kind of the books and the supplemental material around the film that is still canon. And one of the things is the Rebel Alliance is no more, as we saw. And so all the ships went back to their respective planets. So what General Leia essentially has left is just a few ships. So she ended up with X-Wings and not many other ships. So,
all right. Cool.
It's a good explanation, but the result is still boring.
All right. Hey, let's move on to this here, right here. Listen.
Dave?
Huh? Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
All right. It is time for the big question of the week. Are you two ready for this?
Dave, what's the question?
Oh, here it is. Here is the question. If you could have your consciousness implanted into an artificial construct of some kind, what type would it be and why? And a follow-up question to that is, what robot, android, or AI from sci-fi would you also want to inhabit? So it's basically two questions. Who wants to go first?
I think we have JF go first.
God damn it.
He's the robot expert.
Here's my problem. That's why I was trying to buy myself some more time to think about it, is that I wrote an entire book and created an entire world to solve that question. If I were to be a robot, what kind of robot would I want to be, and what kind of society would I want to live in? And then I wrote a book about that. So now I can't use my own book to answer this. So I need to think about it. First of all, would I want to be put into a robot? Yeah, because my body's kind of terrible.
But okay, but wait, JF. What point in your life would you want to be transferred into that artificial construct? Towards
soon.
The well, I mean, really, you wouldn't want to wait till the end of your usefulness as a biological entity?
No, I wouldn't wait until the end of my usefulness. When it becomes unpleasant to live in the flesh bag.
Okay.
When the meat sack is no longer comfortable. We're slowly getting there.
All right. So do you want to?
You got I've got a lot of wounds and scars that make it unpleasant. So
okay.
Soon.
That's fair enough. So you want to let Brad answer first, and then we'll swing back around to your answer.
I'll keep thinking.
Okay.
Oh wait, I have my answer. Go, Brad. I got it, but I got it for next.
Fair enough. You know, if I could have my consciousness implanted in an artificial construct, I would want it to be in something that was bipedal. I would say an android that still had some semblance of human look to it. Pulling aside any possible ramifications of your consciousness suddenly being shoved into something that is completely foreign to what you viewed yourself as, I would want to be bipedal for sure. I would want to be as close to human looking as possible for fear of jarring up stuff.
You want to be a new Battlestar Galactica skin job. Got it.
Super.
Not necessarily, but
that's almost cheating.
Well, no, I don't think so. I would not want to be shoved into B9. That
no
doesn't even
does.
Seem remotely. It's so limiting.
Yes.
If I'm going to dream, I'm going to dream big, and I would want to have the limbs and capabilities as close to what I have currently as possible.
Like,
that's not to say that later on, if I could have other things attached to me, I would be opposed to it.
that's why I said, like, a Battlestar Galactica skin job, like those Cylons that look like humans, it's essentially cheating because it is same thing as being human at that point.
How about something like Data, or what was the last the one that replaced him in the last movie? Was it B4? Is it B4? Or
yeah, God damn it!
I've kind of pushed that out of my brain.
Some people like that movie,
and some people are wrong.
But I mean, okay, so like a Data is kind of a compromise to something that isn't too human, but still is human enough, right? Because you can tell that he's not human, but he's pretty damn close.
Yeah, I guess if you want to be a humanoid robot, that's what you would go for.
So, Brad, what's your what's the answer to the second part of the question? It has to be a particular one. It has to be like a C-3PO or a... what was the one from Aliens?
Oh, Bishop.
Bishop, yeah. Something
or,
like
that. Yeah, Bishop. Depending.
Or RoboCop?
Oh, no.
Baby food all the time?
Yeah. I would have to be fully mechanical at that point. You know, I wouldn't want to have organic elements to my being.
Okay.
If I'm going to be put into something else. So RoboCop would most certainly be out. I would not want to be a cyborg. I would want to be an android, just so I have that mobility. I would not want to be, I wouldn't want to be like the ship's computer from like Star Trek The Next Generation or, mm-hmm. you know, anything like that. I would need to have a body of my own in which I could do things with. So I guess I'm trying to think of a good humanoid type robot / android. Ah, you know what? I would choose. Give me just a second.
Okay.
It was a character played by Robert Culp and was from the an Outer Limits episode called Demon with a Glass Hand. And it's the character Trent.
Okay, I'll have to look that
That's
up when we're done.
That's who I would be.
Okay. I thought you were going with the, it's the wrong actor, but there was a TV show back in the, I want to say, late 70s, early 80s. It was a cop duo, and one was human and one was an android. Remember that? Did you ever see that show?
doesn't ring a bell.
I wish I could remember the name of it.
I think you're making it up.
No. You're wrong. I'm not making it up. I was there. I saw it happen. It was terrible.
It's a goddamn fever dream.
You're not going to tell me my life is a lie. Maybe I'm an android. I have my answer.
That would explain nothing.
All right. So, JF, what's your answer? First, what artificial construct, and then what and why, and then finally, what famous android or robot do you want to be?
Well, I'll answer the second one, and I'll answer the first one at the same time. I would probably pick a Cylon Raider, which is essentially just a spaceship, a conscious spaceship capable of FTL transport speeds. So that would allow me to have a level of freedom that you just don't normally have, and to travel the stars and see things that no other person has seen before, and it would be awesome.
Get a bird's eye view of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
It would check some shit out.
Yeah, cool.
Word.
So that's one answer for both, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, basically the construct would be essentially an artificially intelligent spaceship.
Okay. All right.
What in The Life Engineered is referred to as a Sputnik class Chapek, but whatever.
Okay.
See, there you go.
See, I plugged my own stuff. I'm getting good at this.
That's why you're here, man. We want you to plug your stuff.
It feels dirty.
So dirty.
Thanks, Brad.
I'm gonna say
you're welcome.
I want to derail your weird and awkward conversation that's going on right now, and answer my question with an answer. And
if you must.
I'm going to say I want to be a consciousness that is some kind of AI that's networked in multiple places. I want to be...
You want to be Skynet. Got it.
Yeah.
I see.
Kind of, but I'll be a nice Skynet. I will not cause the destruction of the human race.
A kind and benevolent God.
Yes. Just because you could be in different places, learning different things and seeing different things at the same time, and have the ability to, I'd want the ability to not have to take everything in at the same time. So kind of switch my consciousness from place to place, because that would be very off-putting if you had to be in all those places at the same time. I don't know how it would work.
If you want to be a benevolent, super intelligent computer, you want to be Colossus.
Okay. I don't know what, I know that's from the comics, but.
No. That's from a very old movie called the Colossus the Forbin Project.
Oh, why does that ring a bell? Why have I seen that? Maybe I've seen that.
It's a terrible sci-fi movie.
Okay. Maybe that's why I know the name, just for the reputation.
Probably. It's got some interesting concepts, but it's ancient.
The answer to the second part is I want to be one of the androids from Ridley Scott's acclaimed movie starring Harrison Ford.
You want to be a replicant.
I want to be a replicant. But I don't want to, I don't want to be a bad replicant. I don't want to be...
You want to be Pris.
You want to be Deckard is what you want to be.
Well, there's no... There's,
spoilers.
He's not for sure one, right?
No, the good replicant is Rachel. He wants to be Rachel.
I don't want to be a girl.
He wants to be Deckard.
I want to be a replicant that they didn't show on the movie. One that's just living his life.
His 4 years.
Sure. I mean, but it'd be a good 4 years.
Would it? Servitude to the human race? Second class citizen.
Okay, I'm gonna change my.
I don't think you thought this through, Dave.
I'm gonna change my answer. I want to be. What do I want to be? I want to be Data.
There you go. Super strong.
Yeah. Plus, he's got rank. He's not number one. He was third in command of the Enterprise, right? I think.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Picard, Riker, and then him, right? Anyways.
Sounds about right.
Okay. So we would like your answers to the big question, listeners, if you want to give it to us. geeks@gncast.com. Wow. It's late.
Can you feel that? That's pride.
Geeks@gncasts.com. You can call our voicemail number 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Leave a comment on the blog of this episode on the website, or you can tweet at us at Galactic Netcast, or leave a comment on our YouTube video. We're at youtube.com/user/Galactic Netcast, I think. Just type in the search box, Galactic Netcast, and you'll find us. Okay, let's move on to the next segment, which is this right here.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
I.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
N.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
G.
That's ing, ing, as in, like they said, watching, reading, listening, making. Just things that we took into our senses related to sci-fi over the last week or so. And going to let Brad go first.
Okay. I am speculating.
Ooh.
Yes. A little off the beaten path here. Now, this is from a story. So, VR. The VR goggles are coming out. I know they've been talking about this on TMS, and it's very interesting how there's a certain industry that either adopts a technology or picks a version of a technology, and it thrives.
I know where you're going with this. I know where you're going.
And that is pornography.
Oh, yeah.
At one point in time, gather around, kids, and let me tell you the story of Beta. There was VHS, there was Beta. And Beta was the superior quality version of basically magnetic tape, VHS, like we know the VHS tapes, right? Or, kids, you could look at a history book and see what these ancient things were, these VHS cassettes. Now, Beta stopped being a in-home commercial viable product when Sony, who owned they owned the whole concept of Beta. They did not want to have the porn industry put their materials onto Beta and be used in that fashion, and ultimately VHS took over. Okay. Why is that important? Okay. There's a news story that caught my eye, and I'll explain something here. Pornhub just launched a free VR channel, and it's wild. So it's my speculation here that now that this technology, which there are a couple VR goggle-type products that are there's one that's like close to $1,000, around $900 if I recall. Very, very cost prohibitive. Now there's a newer one that's coming out that is much cheaper. And I'm really kind of speculating that VR is probably going to get a lot bigger, a lot more mainstream now that the adult film industry is starting to focus some of their resources to this.
Well, okay, you've got the Oculus Rift, which was kind of the first one, right?
Yes.
You've got the Google Cardboard, another one. You've got the Samsung, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you have Sony. They're coming out with theirs this fall for like $500. That's the...
Specifically for PS4, though.
Yes.
And you need to have the Move, if I recall correctly. So, yeah, this is very interesting because they have now... here's a little snippet from the article. Have you ever wanted to try porn in virtual reality? Secretly, we all have. Maybe not. And Pornhub has made it insanely easy. The world's biggest adult site partnered with an established VR porn store, Badoink, to offer free 360-degree content. It is obviously not safe for work. If you've ever tried VR porn, let me tell you, it is weird. I tested out the new site using both iOS and Android setups. This is from a news story. This wasn't me. And a couple of different headsets. I don't have that kind of money to spend on a VR goggle set. The video I saw was not exactly virtual reality, as the footage wasn't entirely 3D. Pornhub does say that the new channel will have lots of full 360-degree content, so you really feel like you're in some San Bernardino McMansion having sex with a stranger. The article wraps up...
You're telling it.
The article wraps up, then again, nobody knows what you're watching when you're wearing VR goggles, so this might be perfect for porn addicts who like to enjoy adult content in public without getting caught. Everybody's got their thing.
But, you know, something happens when you watch porn that you don't want to show in public.
Exactly. You need to tape it down or whatever.
The future is so weird, you guys.
It is. But, I mean, this is something that has been speculated for quite some time. And I actually remember an old issue of Heavy Metal where... You know, it follows the story of this woman who is completely addicted to VR, but this is a version of VR where you like wear a full suit. So you get the goggles, but you get the full body sensation. And she basically dies. It's a happy story. But she's just so discontented with life that she just wastes it in this VR suit. So I think we're going to see, just like any new technology, I think, and I'm really kind of speculating that we're going to see a whole new, I think there's going to be more virtual reality, and I think it's going to be taken more seriously now that there's going to be more content available for it.
Yeah, the technology is almost there to do something like what that story that you were talking about with the suit. Because they already have the multiple directional treadmill, so you can actually walk through your virtual reality world. All that's next is to have a suit that, whenever you have a sensation in that world, that would, you know, you'd feel it in that suit. So I don't think they're that far off, really.
No,
I want direct neural plugs.
That would solve a lot of problems.
Exactly. Let's just bypass this whole wearing gear things, plug directly into the nervous inputs, get that done.
Seeing a story and along those lines where a husband and wife had implants and they could actually like feel, and it was in their arms, as I recall, and they could actually share a feeling, you know, sensations with each other. Very limited, of course, but I think that we're going to see a marriage of these technologies and rapid growth in this potential industry. It has a lot, I mean, just beyond pornography. Imagine being able to get surgery experience without actually operating on a patient. All of a sudden we've got Careless Whispers playing in the background.
No, it's
I think Dave is checking out that website you mentioned.
Oh yeah.
This is Jay Gray Hood presents 80s porn music, volume 1.
You have quite the extensive music library, Dave.
That's YouTube.
Oh yeah, thank you, YouTube.
Okay, sorry.
So I mean there's a lot of applications that can be this can be used for, and I think that, you know, the adoption of the adult film industry into this is going to push it forward, like I said before. So
yeah,
the future is now, and that's what I'm speculating.
And porn has to make their money somewhere, because God knows it's all free on the internet now. So they got to start charging for it again in some way, and this would be the way to charge for it.
I don't know. Doesn't it say that Bedoink is free?
It's free, yes.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yay. They probably make their money through Google Ads, I want
to say. Possibly.
Oh, I can buy lube.
How do you swipe those away? With your hand? But no, wait, your hand would be busy. Sorry.
You should have one free.
Yeah.
unless you're that endowed.
Let's move on to something.
Swipe away, no hand.
Let's move on to something more sweet and nice.
Let's linger on this.
No.
Go on.
My ing this week is watching, and I watched a short film called Goldilocks. Now, it takes place in space, so I'm going to let you guys guess where the word Goldilocks refers to.
Is it the Goldilocks zone where planets are okay for to be inhabited?
Yes. Ding, 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 ding. JF, you win a prize.
Nice.
Good
Yay.
Job.
Yay.
So it takes place on a space station orbiting the Earth, and some catastrophe happened on the Earth, and everybody's gone. I think they're pretty much all dead, and all that remains is this one guy, and you see him throughout this short film watering these plants, and you're like, what the hell is going on? And they keep on flashing back to a message from his wife. Or they keep on flashing back to some scenes that happened before with he and his wife. Turns out these two people are the last remnants of the human race, and they were on the space station. But turns out she is dead. All that remains is him and the plants. And there's this computer basically searching the galaxy, searching our known space, for a planet that's in the Goldilocks zone where we think is inhabitable for human beings. But turns out they're looking for a planet that's inhabitable for the plants, not the humans, the plants. And at the end, finally gets an indication from the computer, oh, we found this planet. So he... and he's dying. He's got a lot of radiation poisoning. They keep on showing him puking and losing hair and all this other stuff. And we think that's how she died. So finally at the end, gets an indication that there's this planet found. So he jumps in the spaceship with the plant samples, and he's off to this planet somewhere in the galaxy. So it ends with him basically taking the plant sample and exiting the spaceship with the plant sample. He burns up. It doesn't. It lands on the planet, and it starts life on this new planet. And that's Goldilocks, a really, really cool short film. It's only about 10 minutes long. I think you'll enjoy it.
Huh.
That's my ing. So I kind of spoiled it for you. That's pretty much the whole thing. So never mind. You don't have to watch it. But if you do,
I'm still going to watch it.
We'll put the link in the show notes.
It's interesting. I like the idea that the whole point isn't to... I mean, this assumes that the fear is that there is the only life in the galaxy was on Earth, and that whatever form it takes, life must be preserved. So if you can't preserve human life, it's easier to preserve plants for various reasons, and that's why they're going that route. And I'm hoping that we as a race would be noble enough not to give up and to try to make sure that there is some form of life left in the galaxy should something happen here.
And there's no reason for them to find a planet that's habitable for human beings, because he's the only one left. So what's the
exactly.
point?
Apparently didn't save any animals either.
Yeah. It sounds like they were just up there in orbit, and all hell went, all the shit went down on planet Earth. Everybody died, and they were the only two left. That's what it sounds like.
Whew.
Yeah. Rough.
It's a bit dark.
Rough stuff.
Buddy.
It was a happy ending, though. I cried a little bit.
Aww. Understandable.
All right, so ing. JF, what's your ing?
I've been playing.
All right.
I will be playing. Next week, I'm going to a little convention called Adepticon that is basically, it is what I call Second Christmas. And no, First Christmas is not actual Christmas. It's something else. Adepticon is probably one of the most fun things I do all year. I go for 4 days to Chicago, and I play miniature tactical war games, if you will. One of them that I've been getting into recently, like the main one I play is Warhammer 40,000. I've already talked about it, but it's got an incredibly high entry point. It is costly. There's a lot of rules to learn. You have to buy models, build models, paint models, and then you can start playing the game. So it's the hurdle to get into, the price of entry is extremely high. Also, not everybody necessarily familiar with Warhammer 40,000. However, there is one game that has a very low entry point. It is super easy to play. It is fun. The base set comes with enough materials for two people to start playing. And it is based on a very, very well-known property called Star Wars.
Never heard of it.
Never heard? Oh, you'd like it. It's a bit sci-fi, a bit fantasy. There's laser swords. It's kind of cool.
Is there robots?
Yeah, there's robots. They're called droids.
Oh, okay.
I recommend you start with the first one, episode one. You'll get hooked.
Okay. Okay, JF, go on. Sorry.
So anyways, a little company called Fantasy Flight Games has the license to Star Wars products, and they put out this absolutely addictive game called X-Wing. And it's a strategy game. You play with tiny little models. They come pre-painted. They're lovely. They're based on the Star Wars properties. When I say properties, I mean obviously they're based on models from the first movie. Like the base set comes with two TIE fighters and one X-Wing. It comes with all the pieces, tokens, and gimmicks that you need to play. So you can just immediately, right out of the box, start learning to play with a friend. And there are expansion packs that have ships from other ships from the original trilogy, including A-Wings, Y-Wings, B-Wings, TIE Interceptors. There's models. There's some of the ships from, if you remember, the very old LucasArts game, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, that had more evolved ships. There's stuff from Knights of the Old Republic. There's even ships from Star Wars Rebels, the new television series. The only ship that they don't seem to be putting out is anything from the prequels. So the haters will be glad to hear that. And it is, how to say, I'm putting in front of you some very free meth, very cheap meth, I should say. You buy that box and you've got your X-Wing, your one X-Wing and your two TIE fighters, and you have some fun. And before you know it, you spent hundreds of dollars buying other ships just because it's so cool. So there you have it. Go forth and make Fantasy Flight even richer. And if you're at all familiar with Fantasy Flight, you know that they make quality products. A lot of like the tokens and the pieces that they make, it's all quality stuff. So you don't have to, like, you get what you pay for. Like, it's not super cheap, but it's not as expensive as other games, and you don't need to build or paint anything. You can play right out of the box.
Nice. Sounds cool.
It is.
So we had quite the variety of ings this week. We had playing, watching, and speculating. And just because I like this so much.
I thought you were going to say spanking, but okay.
Yeah.
Speculating.
Spanking. Sure. Spanking, yes. So I just love this intro so much. I'm going to play it one more time. Here we go.
Watching. Reading. Playing. Listening.
Making.
I.
Watching. Reading. Playing.
Listening.
Making.
And
watching, reading,
playing,
listening,
making.
Gee,
I feel pretty proud of myself for putting that together.
That is pretty sweet, my friend.
Thank you. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Did I mention feedback? I think I did, but I'm going to mention it again. Geeks@gncasts.com is our email address. You can call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. Tell us how you feel about virtual reality pornography, 805-328-3966. Tweet at Galactic Netcast. You can join our Facebook group and make a comment there. Comment on this video on YouTube, or there's a bunch of different ways you can get a hold of us and tell us how you feel about stuff. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes. If you like what you hear, please, please give us 5 stars and a short review. That helps other podcast listeners see that this is something worthwhile that they should spend their time listening to. You can also leave a comment on episodes on Stitcher Smart Radio as well. We have a subscribe tab on our website, gncasts.com. There you will find all the different ways that you can subscribe to this podcast. So, JF Dubow, thanks again for being our guest this week on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Tell people where people can find your stuff online.
Oh, well, first of all, thanks for having me. Like, I really miss hanging out with you guys. I love nerding out about sci-fi, and you guys do it best. You listeners can find my stuff. Look, there's a lot of my stuff that I want to point people to, but right now, what is the crisis, the emergency, the red alert is to get my book A God in the Shed funded. So just go to the bit.ly/godintheshed to pre-order, and I will love you in unholy ways forever.
Unholy, eh?
True.
I don't know about that,
but yes. But oh, so good.
That's a little scary.
It's naughty but worth it.
Okay. All right, JF.
And you were worried about me using spanking? Come on now.
Yeah. I was worried.
But I got uncomfortable quick.
Yeah, I love how he flustered Dave.
I'm easily flustered.
It's fun to do.
Okay, I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Gregor, Corey, Matt.
Bye, Dave.
Anessa, Jeff, and more. We will talk to you guys next time.
Bye, Dave.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.